My name is Kay Ross, she, her.
And you're listening to Watch Out for Fireballs Dispatch, the last dispatch of the year, where we're going to answer your questions, talk about topics, and read your responses.
Yeah, I think we should just like jump right to it. This is the last thing we're recording for the year.
We're both feral to get off mic
and
take some time off.
Yeah,
we're recording this after Duckstream, tired, ready to have a little break.
Yeah, real horny for some unstructured time, SSR, sustained silent reading, like we used to do in school.
I'm going to do some SSR. I'm going to try not to set my alarm a bunch, which never works. I just wake up at the time I always wake up.
Yeah.
But there is a little bit of like hee-hee to it. I feel a little bit like a fun stepdad giving his kids cereal for dinner when I don't set my alarm, you know? Yeah. Or weekend dad, not stepdad, very different.
Yeah.
It's a good feeling. And, quite frankly, we've earned it. This has been a tough year for everyone.
Yep.
Everyone deserves a little time off. So I'm really looking forward to it. And I also love, I love doing dispatches.
Yeah.
They're fun and easy.
Get
us started, Kay.
Yeah. Get us started with the games question, from Paul, who, writes something very nice. About coming out as non-binary a little bit later in life. Thank you very much for the kind words there. Then they say, shit, that wasn't a question. Gary, have you tried Caves of Cud yet?
No. I don't play games out for work as often as I would like to.
Yeah,
interested in it, have not played it. So no specific reason.
Mm-hmm. No, it's one of those games that's like a Dwarf Fortress or anything where like I see really bonkers stories about like from it that make me think, oh yeah, no, that might actually be pretty good, but I wonder how much you have to dig to get to that.
Yeah, it seems like it's a big ask, but sometime at some point the itch will strike me.
Yeah,
and I'll get into it because I am interested.
Mm-hmm.
This one's for Kay. Danny says, Kay, rank all the Silent Hill games.
Yeah. I am going to go with major Silent Hill games. We're not doing Book of Memories on this bad boy. I am going to say kind of roughly tied for first place. It depends on the day, Silent Hill 2 or Silent Hill 3. I'm feeling Silent Hill 3 today, so let's say that.
Woof.
Okay, cool. Well, I'm really happy to have competed. I'm sorry I didn't rise to anybody's expectations.
You're so close.
Yeah, and then this is descending, by the way. So Silent Hill, the original, Silent Hill F, Silent Hill 2 Remake, Silent Hill 4 The Room, Silent Hill Shattered Memories, Silent Hill Downpour, Silent Hill Homecoming, and Silent Hill Origins.
There you go.
Yep.
Yeah. What does Dylan say?
Dylan says, during a couple of the last several episodes, you all have briefly referred to the game Underrail. What are your experiences with it? I've had it in my Steam library for several months after being told it was a super crunchy RPG, somewhat reminiscent of Fallout 1, but haven't yet had the time to give it a shot.
I have like 10 hours in Underrail. I never completed it. Because I got to a part that was hard, and just something else came up. It's really cool. It's got a lot of ImSim DNA, like an old school Fallout in terms of tone and mechanics, but you can do a lot of cool shit. I would like to get in the back of this room. This guy doesn't want to let me in there. I'm going to go sneak in or whatever. Stuff like that. It's cool. It's on my list. It's perpetually installed on my computer as something to play when I have time. It is very cool.
Yeah.
So have not actually gone through it, but I'm looking forward to going through it at some point.
Cool. Yeah, you warned me off of it, saying it would be too country or and I'm just
it's a little too country. I'm a little rock and roll.
I'm a little bit too rock and roll is the thing about me that everybody knows. You warned me off of it for being too crunchy. I'm not necessarily against it as a thing. Looks neat to me. I'm fine. I'm good with tactical combat. So
yeah. Yeah, this is probably something where I was fresh off of bouncing off of it and feeling like it was too crunchy for me. But I've also
You didn't want me to excel where you floundered.
No. It was just like an assumption based on
expressed preferences over the course of a few years.
Yeah. It was based on things you said and did.
Yeah.
It was based on believing words you said.
Well, I got a couple of problems there.
I probably shouldn't have done that. I will never make that mistake again. No Q says, hi-o, been listening for around a year and a half now, and I'm working on the massive backlog of episodes. Just finished up your episode on Tetris, and I haven't heard anything either of you have said about Red Dead Redemption 2. Currently, you're playing the game as a cozy winter game. Sorry if you said something about it in the past. Hope you both have amazing holidays and New Year. Thank you, and I hope you do too.
I just finished up your episode about the Pac-Man cartoon. Have y'all ever covered the complete works of...
It's a War and Peace.
Yeah.
Red Dead Redemption 2 is really big. I am interested in it.
I'm super interested. I would like it.
I bet you if I fell into a rhythm with it, I really enjoy it. Someone who worked on it is a listener and gave us copies. I have a copy of it. I feel guilty that I have not really played it, but it's a thing where like I'm not good at having something in the background that I poke at for like 6 months.
Yeah.
I'm not, it just doesn't work really well with my brain. So like when I play it, I'm going to want to sit down and like fucking play it. And that is hard to do with work stuff. I'll have to get pretty ahead on work.
That is like a real good, I have like a month off kind of thing. And I just want to like settle into a warm bath of a kind of non-demanding cinematic open world game.
A task list.
Yeah.
You know, with that is in a genre that I kind of like, you know, a well done or at least even a little bit subversive Western I'm kind of into.
Yeah.
Just to inflame you with jealousy.
Okay.
My friend Andrew, lawyer, he gets a sabbatical this year.
Oh my God.
He's at the year where you start getting a sabbatical.
Wow. But he also had to become and then work as a lawyer.
Well, yeah, I mean, there are a lot of jobs that have sabbaticals. Professors get them and stuff too. But it's what a right way to do things.
I know, right?
You know, and just like you're going to be better at this job if you take some time away from it.
Mm-hmm.
It's fucking obvious.
Go out, experience. Yeah.
Go travel for a little bit, and you're going to come back a better person and a better employee, and your happiness will translate into more productivity. It's been proven.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not communist propaganda. It's just true. Nope.
Yeah,
we just don't do it.
It's just the thing about humans and sustained work under capital. Yeah.
Yeah.
The reason I did the comparison thing at the beginning is I can't think of two games that are further apart in almost every quality than Tetris and Red Dead Redemption 2.
Very different. Yeah. The degree to which they're similar is that I would end up spending a lot of time playing blackjack.
Yeah.
Red Dead Redemption 2 or poker rather, which is kind of like Tetris.
And if poker is like Tetris.
Yeah, poker's is Tetris's now.
Mm-hmm. But poker's kind of a bejeweled, is the thing. Yeah, it's more of a match three.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What does Peyton say?
Peyton says, my D&D group is about to begin a game where we play as the worst characters we can think of. My friend is playing a serial killer, and I'm playing a druid that has intercourse with animals. Have either of you played a TTRPG where you are something other than the typical hero set out to save the princess and slay the lich? If not, what is your most memorable plot?
Yeah, I've never played that dark. In a thing. I've played a lot of kind of like roguish ne'er-do-wells, but I have run games for that. I ran a superhero campaign that was largely villainous, and I am running the game I'm running now. The crew are a family of kind of shitbags and dirtbags, and it is difficult to run games for that kind of group sometimes, because without having a heroic basic decency motivation.
Yeah, there's no reason to do anything.
Yeah, it's not impossible to do anything. It's just, it's harder to roleplay.
Yeah.
So we're doing that, but I am consistently running into a, why don't we just kill him? Mm-hmm. As an answer that would be good in character, where I have to be like, I don't want you to kill him because there's something more interesting that happens if you don't.
Yeah.
And I just kind of have to roll with it. So I've run games like that. I haven't really played one like that.
Yeah.
What I've been doing is ramping up the darkness of the world to match and having people fuck them over.
Yeah, that's probably the right way to go. Yeah.
Is how I'm kind of countering it. Like, if you guys want to be shit heels, I'm going to put you in a really shitty world where you are bright by comparison.
Yeah, you can't be the worst person in the situation.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't really have like a most memorable plot. I've not done any of these. I've not played as many TTRPGs as I like because of friends.
Yeah. Well, maybe someday, like, you know, you'll move and then you'll be in a place with people.
Maybe. Possibly.
Who knows? Jordan and Maya ask, hey, I got a simple one for y'all today. Is there a game that you secretly think is great or even a masterpiece, but only when you play it wrong?
Oh, we did a whole live episode about this, Jordan and Maya.
Yeah. We did. I don't know if it's something that is masterpiece because of that. There are definitely games I prefer to play wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And these are just examples from the live episode. Like, I like Left 4 Dead as a single player arcade or co-op arcade experience.
Mm-hmm.
That's alien behavior. It's not how you're supposed to play, but I like it that way. I wouldn't call it like a masterpiece, but I like that version of it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is going back to something that we've joked about, you know, relatively recently, but I would say that the way that I play Stardew Valley is not intended.
Yes.
You know, doing that. Like, the canonical example that we gave in that episode was Smash Brothers. And that's just because playing it to dick around with the items. And that's more of a, you know.
But that ends single player. There is an element of it, just like the way it's meant to be played is with other people. And I don't like doing that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, there's an element of just, you know, gaming is a solitary activity to me that comes up with this.
Yeah.
Like Mario Kart. I like playing Mario Kart on its own.
Yeah.
Just rising the ranks and going through the different cups and stuff. I like playing multiplayer Mario Kart just fine, but I think it's really fun just to go through the tracks.
Yeah. Yeah. Trying to think of what else, but I lost it. Halo 3 is not a very good game, but it came with a mode called Forge mode, where basically you could everybody could just snap and then be in a become like a move anywhere and spawn and move anywhere robot, like flying robot eye kind of thing, that could like grab objects and spawn them and throw them around. The idea being like, oh, this is a world editor to in order to kind of create like little scenarios, like multiplayer scenarios and stuff for your buddies, but you could do the world editing with multiple people. And it was real fun, like even couch co-oping to like just play catch in that engine.
Oh, sure.
Or like one person was that and just like try and like drop shit on the other person as they went around. Like, so, you know, suddenly one character can become kind of omnipotent is a real fun, like dicking around thing.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there we are.
Yeah.
What does Eric say?
Eric says, moving on to a lifestyle question here. I've been listening to some older episodes, so watch out. Here comes some real past blasts.
Love a past blast.
Is that a Garyism?
No, I don't know. It is now.
Oh, okay.
Yoink.
That's mine now. So hey, Gary. How was it introducing your future wife to your long-term partner, the Leon Kennedy body pillow? Has the throuple been an easy adjustment, or how did Leon take to being assumedly disposed of?
Little clarification there. It's not a body pillow, and now Kay can attest to that.
Yep.
Because you've been over here and seen it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a pillow.
Yeah.
I get the joke, but it's just a pillow. I don't fuck it. And it's not even just fully Leon.
No, like, it's the cover
fucking,
art.
You'd be fucking the cover of Resident Evil 4. And if that's your thing, cool, let's talk.
Uh-huh.
But it's not like just fucking a Leon.
Yeah, it's not even fucking like the GameCube cover. It's fucking the PS2 cover.
Yeah, yeah. It's just a scene of Leon near the village with some zombies and shit in the background. Mm-hmm. And my wife loves it. My wife loves Leon Kennedy. She is not a hardcore gamer, but got really into RE4 on VR.
Oh, yeah.
And loves Leon and has a bunch of Leon collectibles, including a t-shirt that says, "I love Leon Kennedy from Resident Evil."
Yeah.
That's the end of the joke. I just thought it was a funny shirt to get her. But
yeah,
getting her Leon stuff is fun. This will come out after Christmas. I got her a little stocking stuffer, is a little Leon Kennedy pin.
Oh,
yeah. Fun. We all love Leon in this house.
In this house, we
we do. He's great. Yeah. So that pillow, I'm looking right at it. It's in my office because it also functions as our guest room. And it's just a pillow.
Yeah. I put a regular pillowcase on it because I didn't want to do was like get head oils on it or to like drool and stain it. Because every night I fall asleep with a cough drop in my mouth.
Is that true?
No, it's not. No, it's just
like, how are you still alive? When I use it as a pillow, pillowcase goes on it. A lot of times Jessica sits on it. Jessica really loves loafing on it. It's really cute.
Oh, that's really adorable. Yeah.
Yeah. But the sex is amazing when we fuck the pillow, to answer your question.
it's very generous is what I hear.
Yeah. Leon, big dick, good at oral. Mike says, since you have your podcast on Spotify, would you consider uploading playlists of music you listen to on it? If not, I'd like to hear your theoretical playlist on Dispatch.
So I literally just got off of Spotify.
I'm an Apple Music person as well.
Yeah, I got onto Apple Music.
Yeah, I don't, it wasn't for a moral valence. I'm just in the Apple ecosystem and it comes, you get a bundle with the Apple Arcade thing.
Yeah.
And I like a bunch of Apple Arcade games. I never really have engaged with the social media part of that.
No. You can share playlists and stuff. Like I did the best of REM playlist on that.
Yeah. Yeah, I make some playlists of it, but I have not really shared them. So I don't know. I don't, I don't get into new music very often.
Yeah.
Because I'm old. So I'm still listening to a lot of the same stuff and I go through kind of phases. So like I'm on the tail end of going through a real AM gold phase. Mm-hmm. I was listening to a lot of 70s kind of medium rock. Things, and I'm kind of moving back into classics. Recently, I've been listening to albums from bands I like, and just being like, "Oh, okay." Like, I haven't listened to Surfer Rosa in a while. Listen to Surfer Rosa. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm kind of not in a playlist mode right now.
Yeah, pretty much the same, except more restricted. so like it would be a lot of
restricted.
I mean,
kids bop.
Yes. So like it would literally just be a bunch of the same shit over and over again. Yeah. And I can just tell you the bands I like and I have at length.
Yeah. It's not a, so I appreciate the interest, but the answer is no, we can't kind of.
Let's see. Matthew, writes another media question here. Gary, you should really check out the James Gunn DC movies. You mentioned it recently that you weren't interested in the new Superman movie because it looked like too much of a straight putt for you. And that you prefer deconstruction when it comes to superheroes. If you haven't been told this already, let me be the first to tell you that James Gunn's take on the DC universe is wholly deconstructionist. His version of Suicide Squad is genuinely great, and Superman might be one of the best capeshit movies ever made. This is an ongoing conversation that is taking place on the scale of months.
This is the long war. Little mild misunderstanding. It's not because I prefer deconstruction stuff. It's because I'm not a DC kid. Yeah. I built in affection for characters does a lot of work for me to get me to tip into a superhero. Thing. Like I'm not inherently just interested in superheroes as they are. I'm interested in the superheroes I like from when I was a kid. I'm not against it. I'll watch it at some point. Liv, my wife, likes the Suicide Squad movie a lot. And has told me I should watch it and she'd be willing to rewatch it. So maybe we'll over break. And if I get into that, there's a good chance I'll watch Superman.
Yeah.
I just, there's a Hawk Girl in it. I have to accept the idea of a Hawk Girl. And I'm like, Hawk Girl sucks. And Green Gardner has that haircut. Like, that's rough to look at. Green Gardner. Guy Gardner, the Green Lantern, has that haircut. He looks like a fucking Energizer plastic man. Nobody looks like that. It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. It just, it's hard. Like, there's little micro signifiers that are hard for me to get into.
Yeah.
From that.
I watched and enjoyed The People's Joker for comedy and trans reasons, but there were so many like references in it that I just like missed. Like Tim Heidecker voice, who I thought was just like Alex Jones. No, it's Tim Heidecker doing Perry White. I had to look up who Perry White was, Gary.
Yeah. Yeah. It's Superman's boss.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No clue.
Yeah. It's, there's a lot there. And I know Batman stuff pretty well. I don't know Superman stuff other than his boss. I typically, and historically I don't like Superman. There's some stories that are okay with it. But yeah, so at some point I will, I hear you. The, Inter-Party Conflict, asks, they say some nice things about how we don't run ads.
Yeah.
You know, appreciate that. I'm glad we don't run ads. I hate listening to ads.
Yeah.
Sucks. If I'm listening to a podcast, they start playing ads. It does suck. I will still do it. And I don't begrudge people doing it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like it.
I'm going to skip it because that is my, that's what I can do. I have that power. Also, ads are getting worse. The ad rates are getting longer. Most of them are for gambling. Yeah.
Yeah. They're getting more evil. Yeah. You know, it's fucking nuts. Like, it's not just, this is for extreme sex restraints or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, that's fine.
Yeah. That's selling it good.
That's fine. You know, that's a fine thing to advertise. People want it. It's a useful service. Yeah. But like being for gambling and stuff like that, this ruins lives and there's no upshot to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want to engage with evil.
Yeah.
And it is harder and harder to do advertising shit and not engage with evil.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we played with that a little bit. I'm glad we don't do it as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
They move on, mostly directed at me. As an outspoken fan of the movie Willow, have either of us watched the Willow TV series? If so, what did you think about it?
Oh my God, I've watched the Willow TV series so many times, Gary. I fucking love that.
I refuse to watch the movie, but I watched that series left and right. The only canonical Ghostbusters movies are Ghostbusters 2 and Ghostbusters Answer the Call, and I've seen them so many times. I have not watched it, and I was mad when they took it off Disney Plus.
Oh, that's stupid. That's like authentic, not like lost media. I'm sure there are torrents of it, but like there is no legitimate way to get that, right?
Yeah, it's stupid. This we're just going to take things off because of like server space issue bullshit. Uh-huh. Like,
no.
Part of the reason why I subscribe to a service is to have an archive. Mm-hmm. You fucking dopes.
Yeah.
So I'm mad about that. I've not watched it. It looked really good. The reviews made it seem like something I would like, quite a bit, but I have not watched it.
Yeah.
And Kay was not available. Lying.
What's that?
And Kay was lying.
I have not. I believe that Willow is good. It's just kind of like the DC thing. It's not my nostalgia.
Yeah, which I understand. And there's a really good chance if you ever did watch Willow, you wouldn't like it that much.
Probably. You know? Yeah, and it's not okay. My nostalgia.
Yeah, not your nostalgia. Yeah. It's an old fantasy movie.
Yeah, I I'm aware of The Goonies. I think I saw it, but like I didn't watch it over and over again. If I sat down to watch The Goonies, I probably think it was boring as shit. I don't have the signifiers.
I was talking to somebody about, this might have been something we talked about on Duckstream, where there are like stone cold classics and then there are things that are nostalgia classics.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like something like Back to the Future, like that's just like a really good movie. If you watch it, it just kind of hits beats.
Yeah.
You know, like this is just watchable. You know, this is a good movie. Who Framed Roger Rabbit is like that?
Yep.
So the Goonies, I love the Goonies. I have nostalgia for it, but it's not like that. It is not as well made or good. Like there is nostalgia rounding that's happening that I can recognize.
Yeah. The Goonies, Stand By Me. Yeah. Rip Rob Reiner.
Yeah. Yeah. Rip Rob Reiner. Well. Yeah. I can't watch Stand By Me anymore. Not because it's too intense, but just I've seen it too many times. It's like I couldn't eat another bite.
I haven't seen it in a very long time, but it was it was a big one for me as a kid.
Yeah. Yeah. What does Bo say?
Bo says, something I've really loved that you two have done for years is advocating for and praising portrayals of people of carriage or gravity in the art that you engage with. There are still so many unconscious negative associations that culture at large makes in its summing up of fat people that having those assumptions knocked down at first by praise and love is wonderful, especially for people like myself who aren't living that experience and need to remain vigilant about the cruel base principles society teaches us to subordinate with within. Is this something you've actively discussed as important to your work as critics? Do you have a framework that you work within for engaging with large people in art?
The answer to the last question is no.
No framework.
We've never discussed it, and I don't think we have a framework. I can only speak for me. For me, where it comes from is just liking seeing different types of bodies.
Yeah.
And stuff. All I want in fiction is to be representative. Like, it helps me find the truth in fiction when it feels representative of real life.
Yes.
In a lot of ways. So the idea that everyone would look super telegenic in a traditional way, or everyone would have 0% body fat, takes me out of something. Mm-hmm. It doesn't put me into it. It doesn't make it more appealing to me. So I like seeing when that's not the case.
Yeah.
You know, I just like seeing it. It's not a, I've never thought of it as a praxis thing.
No.
Like, it's like, so for example, there was a bunch of discourse during the Avengers movie where Thor got fat. Mm-hmm. And people were like, this is evil. And I was like, I don't think that's evil. Mm-hmm. You know, like he was a bodybuilder guy who got out of shape. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like this is being mean. It's just a thing that happens. Like, it's a trope thing. It didn't bug me.
You can be upset at like an individual gag or whatever, like, but like that they did that, or like overall the way it was presented, that is a way that somebody can change. And art about people is about change.
And it also feels like such a minor thing in the world of, in a world of shallow hals and memes and stuff. Mm-hmm. And like Ursula, you know, it feels like it is not a very hateful portrayal. Like, everything counts. I understand that argument, but that I don't want to put on the same amount of armor to fight every single thing.
No.
You know, so it's not a praxis thing for me. I just like seeing it. Mm-hmm. It feels more real to me.
Yeah. It's one of my favorite things about watching a movie from the 70s, you know,
yes. Like, I love Brian Dennehy.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
everybody knows the character actor who's like,
But for real, I think that there is something about like let male actors be a little chunky, right?
Let female actors be a little chunky.
Let everyone
be everything. Like,
yes.
It's weird. This actually touches a thing that I'll run into with representation of other stripes, where like you can't have, when people get upset when there is a queer villain or like a black villain or something. Mm-hmm. And like, no, they get that too.
Yep.
Like, we do not divide us. We're all humans.
Yeah.
Do not erase the ability for crapulence. Like, you don't mm-hmm. want to make a queer villain who is queer in a way that exclusively does harmful tropes. Mm-hmm. I don't need a queer, like, trans character who, like, tricks people or does anything like that that's actually fucking false and stupid.
The Scoutmaster from the Radioactive Man cartoon, right?
Yes.
You don't want that.
Yeah. I'm not interested in that. But if it's just in a nuanced way and the person also has this aspect, I think that's good, because it teaches people through demonstration that all types of people are all types of things, which I think is the truth.
Yeah.
I think that is a valuable lesson, and it actually reflects our world. The world is that which is the case. I put a lot mm-hmm. of value in that.
Yeah. I the only reason I brought up the male thing is just because like that was where you got a lot of like fat representation.
Yeah.
You know, and like, I mean, by Hollywood definitions of fat, I'm talking like Jack Black. I'm talking like Chris Pratt season one, you know, but like, I don't know if you are just either it filters out so much talent, right? Like, you are asking for just the people who are genetically gifted enough to be Hollywood shredded, you know, who come from a position where they can dedicate the time to keeping their body like that and are able to do it very quickly. Or you are asking a comedian like Kumail Nanjiani to test cycle and like reduce your lifespan in order to gain access to this part of the industry.
You know, once you play Kingo, that opens up career opportunities for
it. Really does. Kingo. I have no idea. Yeah, but that was top of mind. But obviously, you want for men and women, you want to draw from talented people, and you want to see lots of people and lots of stuff. I don't know. I get to be excited about inclusion if exclusion bothers me, right?
Yeah. And it's a thing too, where I think that there is an element of correct for the character that I will buy. mm-hmm. for some things, right? Like if a character, the fact of the matter is the shape that I'm in, I've lost a lot of weight, but I've never been weaker in mm-hmm. my life. I should not play a Captain America because I can't run.
Yeah.
You should, it doesn't have to be some kind of weird muscle golem, but somebody who's in shape makes sense mm-hmm. to me yeah. As a thing for that. But if it doesn't matter, if it's not relevant to a character, mm-hmm. there's no reason why a character, the actor shouldn't be bigger or smaller.
Yeah.
Because it has no reflection on their ability to do the thing that they're doing. Mm-hmm. It's buying the assumption that they're worse at stuff, which is not true.
Not true.
Yeah. So yeah, it sucks. And it, for me, it just comes from literally liking seeing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
and being bothered when it's done badly too. Yeah, so like yeah, if it is just presented as a, you know, as a thing, I will be happy with it.
Yeah. Speaking of Willow, it's interesting how there's like, it's weird that Seinfeld was the only show that had little people on it mm-hmm. for basically forever.
Yeah.
It's like the movie Willow and the show Seinfeld. And other than that, we don't have little people.
Yeah.
You know, except for Peter Kinklage, who is allowed.
Yes.
But like, that's silly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know. It would be useful to see that the way you kill bigotry is through seeing examples.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You see little people out in the world.
Yeah.
One of them works at the Domino's near me.
Yeah. Yeah.
he's great.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, that's, yeah. Gabriel says, you folk watching any Pluribus or the Tear Company thoughts? For me, Pluribus has been Bravo Vince sauce so far. Tear Company was fucking absurd, and I loved it for that. I also really liked all the unseemly little goblin dudes like Mike and his roommate. Great observation of goblins on that show. I have not watched Pluribus. I'm waiting for the season to end. Mm-hmm. I had watched The Tear Company. I really liked it, except for the final episode left was a little bit unsatisfying to me, but I agree with you about the goblin representation.
Yeah, I've watched like the first three episodes of Tear Company, and then I got rid of my HBO. So
yeah,
gonna be grabbing a hold of that. I guess now that the season's over. Yeah.
Yeah. I wish that I could still buy a DVD.
That'd be great, right?
Yeah. I don't have to subscribe to a streaming service. At $15, I'll just get the first season of The Tear Company. Mm-hmm. And or the first season of the Willow show
mm-hmm.
and not have to resubscribe to a whole thing. Yeah. We need to go back.
We do. What did they do to us?
Yeah.
Thickwood Badger.
Great name.
Very great name. Have either of you seen the movie After Hours? After listening to the Beau is Afraid episode, it reminded me of how similar those movies are, and I think it would fit into the expanded scope of Unfilmable. If you had seen it in... If you have seen it, what color of the feel bad rainbow is, I was just trying to get laid, and by a series of comedic mishaps and being pursued by a vigilante mob through the streets of Soho.
I like anxious.
Yeah.
You know, in the uncut gems part of the feel bad rainbow, I feel like.
Yeah. I haven't seen it, nor had I heard about it. Yeah.
I only know the Velvet Underground song. I do not. I've never seen that movie. I don't think I've heard of it. If I saw the cover, I might ring a bell, but.
I vaguely recognize it. It's a Scorsese movie.
Okay.
Yeah. Who stars in it? Starring nobody. No, you have to go pretty far down on the cast list to get people I recognize. So no clue. Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that. But yeah, no knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Jack Attack says, my friend and I like to play a game where we sort things into broad categories, of dog person or cat person, kind of meaning that either a dog or cat person would enjoy the things, or if it's a person, then they are a dog or cat person. For example, to make this make more sense, Dragon Quest is dog person, Final Fantasy is cat person, Rob Liefeld is dog person, Todd McFarlane, cat person. I'd recommend you try this out and do a couple for yourselves.
Yeah, this is intuitive to me, but I cannot think of examples like to like test you with, Gary.
Yeah. This does make sense to me as a thing. Mm-hmm. I think it maybe would have been more resonant with me when I identified more strongly as a cat person.
Yeah.
Before I kind of became an all animals are good.
Yeah.
Like not taking a shitty centrist thing. I've just met some really good dogs since then. Mm-hmm. That kind of changed my opinion. Dog representation has gotten better. I don't know. This does make sense to me, but I will spin it around the brain box.
Yeah.
See some stuff.
I'm trying to think of like dueling pairs of like
Resident
something.
Evil and Silent Hill.
Yeah. Silent Hill's cat person.
Yeah, absolutely. Silent Hill's cat person, Resident Evil's dog person. I would agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
100%. Icewind Dale is dog person. Baldur's Gate is cat person.
Like what is Planescape if Baldur's Gate is cat person?
Lizard.
Yeah.
Like lizard, skink, gecko.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Pac-Man toad.
Yeah. Wasteland is dog person. Fallout is cat person. No, actually. It's the other way around.
Yeah, I would agree.
Fallout cat person.
Yeah. What does videogames.afghanistan say?
Videogames.afghanistan says December time for my annual meta duck feeding. If that's a pattern you've had, video games, we've not noticed it. So they continue. With K moving close by, what about one couch co-op game of WoW a year? I'd love to do simple stuff like even Jackal or the original Contra.
That's a fun idea. We can answer that and then move on to the second one. We've done Contra.
We have. Yeah.
Yeah. So big demerit to you.
Mm-hmm.
That's for strike one.
That was the double EP with Little Nemo.
Yeah. Which was a mistake, but still strike one.
Yes.
It was strike like 10 for us.
Yeah.
But that's a good idea. I have no problem with that. Mm-hmm. That's a fun idea.
That is a fun idea. Continuing, with 500 episodes, and I'm guessing somewhere around /400 games, I'd also love an annual rundown of games, say 2 minutes on the first 50 episodes, maybe even if use one of those this or that apps to get a ranking. Oh, I like that. That kind of goes along with our draft idea. So use a this or that app. Yeah.
I've done that. I've done a this or that app on all the WoW games.
Uh-huh.
Kind of thing to put them in a ranking. And then I posted that in the Slack at some point, but it would be a fun special or something.
It would, yeah. And then like one of us would give the list and then we'd give the other, and then the ones that have like the least differential end up winning. Yeah.
Yeah.
Something like that. Also, what about a quarterly music show? Gary, you have your Unk band, and Kay's into synths. Give me your sounds, Gwen too. I'm not into synths.
No, you did one synth theme song
for
the level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not a synth person. Yeah. That wasn't even synth. That was just MIDI. Yeah. No, I'm a guitarist. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. My understanding of your relationship to music, and I'm not, there's no judgment in this. This is just my understanding. So please correct me, is that it is not generative. Like you are not very much of a music writer.
No, I'm not.
Yeah. So not that there's anything wrong with that. I'm not, again, no value judgment on this, but
I need you to walk more carefully.
You're a crafts person
and
are interested in getting good at it. In a game sense, almost.
I'm interested in getting good at it. And in a game sense, it is the way that like people used to just like before TV have a piano in their parlor, like playing music that I like is entertaining to me.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. I get that. And it's fun. Like it's a really fun toy. If you learn an instrument, you'll never be bored.
Yep.
It's really fun. But yeah, I think they're just very different approaches.
Yep.
To it. Not again, no qualitative thing. I am going to start plugging the band. We have a record coming out. So everyone get ready to get sick of hearing about that.
Yeah.
But I am going to utilize my platform to get everyone listening to this to buy vinyls. So I don't have 1,000 of them in my basement.
By the time this comes out, I'll probably have that, up on YouTube, the Modred set, from the most recent one. Yeah.
I think it was really good. There's one mistake I made that no one would have noticed if I didn't call it out. And I thought about it for 12 hours.
Yeah.
That sucks. I wish I hadn't said anything about it, but it's I thought it was a pretty good set. I think we practiced and did a pretty good job.
It was good. I stayed up for it when I oughtn't have.
Thanks. I don't think you've ever listened to the band before.
I have listened
to... you've never said anything about it, which is suspicious.
I listened to it. It's weird to talk about it to somebody. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's weird to talk about the person who makes it. Yeah.
You having never listened to it was easier for me to believe than you had listened to it and were just like, I got nothing to fucking say about this.
No, I like it. Yeah.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. Specifically, the guitar tone, tons of REM in that. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Andrew is a big, we have Rickenbacker songs as well. We're not going to do a show with three guitars.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Andrew has the Rickenbacker, his regular guitar, and his 12 string. Mm-hmm. And we kind of, and it, you know, to me, it's, mm-hmm. they have alternate tunings, but I'm like, what the fuck, man?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
this is just because I play in a linear instrument. Mm-hmm. But so it means on certain sets, we can only do certain songs.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's yeah. Rickenbacker sets and 12 string sets, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, I enjoy your music. It's really good.
Thanks. Thank you. See, it wouldn't have been weird to say that.
No.
Because let this be a lesson to everyone listening. Like, it's not mm-hmm. weird to say something like that because the person's probably assuming you don't.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, like, after Duckstream, Brayton said a nice thing about the band. I just basically assumed Brayton did not care for it uh-huh. because he never said anything about it.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, you know, here I am doing this thing for, like, years and years and nothing. You know, I just assume people don't like it.
Yeah.
And that's okay because not everybody likes everything.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm never going to force it and be like, hey, mm-hmm. it'd be, as weird as it might be for you to say something like that, think about how much weirder it'd be for me to be like, what'd you think of that?
Yeah.
That'd be weird.
So here's the thing. It's also not something that I listen to like with a lot of frequency because it's weird. I listen to you so much already.
Yeah, yeah. No, of course. Like it would be, I don't like hearing my voice that much. Like every once in a while, I'll get in the car and like Liv is listening to one of our podcasts and it does so many points of psychic damage that I have to respawn in the house
yeah.
and then go back out to the car again.
It blinking red.
Yeah. Just, boss is almost dead. It puts me in my second phase immediately. It skips the first phase. It's like wearing that helmet and fighting a lawn.
Yeah.
fighting Hume Knight.
Yeah.
Check it out. Mm-hmm. I will be fucking talking about that a lot.
Yeah, do it.
Apologies in advance.
Mm-hmm.
Final, we're actually getting through all our questions this time, which is crazy.
It's fine.
Matt Bixler, hello, says, Gary, we know you got lit in on Kay's transition before the rest of us, and I've been wondering, did you write the first Quackstack theme song knowing that you'd have to start over from scratch?
I told you at the beginning of 2024.
Which was, Quackstack had already been going on at that point,
yeah,
I want to say. Yeah. And at some point, you might have told me, if you can cut this if this is telling tales out of school.
Uh-huh.
The way you told it me at first was you were having feelings around it and you weren't sure.
Uh-huh.
So I was just, my instructions were to do nothing different until told otherwise.
Right, yeah.
So I did not do anything knowing to have to do it over from scratch. There was a point mm-hmm. in which I found out about it and was like, I'm going to have to do that again at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't want to do like the transitional one that was kind of like,
and we're then not we sure.
got Kay Ross, whose gender is undetermined. You know, they go to the, I didn't want to do like a middle stage evolution
yeah,
for it.
No, no.
That's would, you know, give away the game. The last thing I wanted to do was out you. So I was taking the don't do anything different instructions very seriously.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah. But it would have been very funny if every single time you had like an update on the feeling, there's a new theme song that was like, they're kind of leaning this way.
Oh my gosh. I want to do lightning round on the topic.
I do.
Okay. Matthew writes, I have two lightning round questions. One, someone put a gun to your head and handed you a Steam Deck.
A lot of lightning round start with that. Like, I know. Uh-oh, someone put a gun to your head is like just a really good recurring, you know, refrain in these.
According to him, you have to download either the whole Dark Souls trilogy plus DLC or just Elden Ring plus DLC. And that's all you're allowed to play for the rest of your life. Which are you choosing? How do you get him to calm down once he realizes how short-sighted his actions were?
Yeah.
I'm taking the Dark Souls series.
I would take Dark Souls too. Yeah. I loved my first playthrough of Elden Ring. It's very holy. Mm-hmm. My second playthrough was not as fun. Once you know where everything is, mm-hmm. it's not like not having a reason to go into all the caves
mm-hmm.
does a lot of damage. It doesn't make it not a fucking incredible game because a game lasting for, you know, with the DLC, 150 hours or whatever to get mm-hmm. through it once is great. That's so much game. There's no problem with that. But the Dark Souls 1, 2, and 3, not only, you know, if mods are on the table, there's a lot of cool things to do.
Yeah, that's another consideration for me.
Yeah. But I like challenge runs in those games too.
Mm-hmm.
Like doing a whole new build feels really fun and weird.
Yeah.
So yeah, I would definitely take Trilogy.
I think it's been long enough that I want to play Dark Souls 3 again.
Same. It's the one I played the least.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a lot of it will feel fresh. I've only played those DLCs once.
Yeah.
I've had that kind of itch for a little while.
Yeah.
as well.
Weird how that goes in circles. Yeah.
Still not ready for Sekiro again.
No.
Just like, now I fucking get it.
Yeah.
But Dark Souls 3 feels like it has new things to show me, perhaps.
Yes. Second question from Matthew. Now that there's a game called Dispatch that is super popular, how do you plan to differentiate WoW Dispatch from the potential WoW Dispatch?
It's a good question. Mm-hmm. I know about that game, but we don't have any plans to currently cover it. So that might be a problem for future us.
Yeah. We're going to kick that can down the road. If I wasn't doing a bunch of moving shit during break that precluded playing a game just for K, just one for me, it would probably be Dispatch, because I like doing a story heavy one that way. Looks neat. If we did it, we probably just have to say, yeah. I mean, it'll be like when we get around to doing the Better Call Saul episode about Breaking Bad, right?
That is true. Yeah, it'll be just a little bit confusing. We're going to trust our audience.
Yes.
Is how we're going to do that. Yeah. Nolan asked, what are your go-to orders for the following eatery situations? Breakfast in a diner, a sandwich in a deli, dinner at a barbecue joint.
Yeah. Breakfast in a diner, eggs over medium, wheat toast, sausage patty, and hash browns, the crunchy shreddies, not the home fries,
called sausage patty anymore. She took that nickname in high school and you shouldn't call her that.
Okay. All right. Okay. Yeah. Just a real bait. If I'm getting a big diner breakfast, that is what I want.
I either want an eggs Benedict or I want a scramble with home fries, like good potatoes.
Yeah.
For them. Deli sandwich. I've turned into a real basic B in terms of deli sandwiches recently. Mm-hmm. I want like basically a turkey cheddar, lettuce, tomato, mayonnaise, mustard, salt, pepper, oil, vinegar on like a really good white bread.
Yeah. With a couple of changes, that's pretty much what I would like to. Yeah. Yeah.
And then what would you get at dinner at a BBQ joint?
Brisket, green beans, and mac and cheese.
Yeah, real similar. Brisket, half regular brisket, half burnt ends. Mm-hmm. And then replace the green beans with like barbecue beans.
Yeah.
Or possibly collard greens. And then also mac and cheese.
Yeah. Something about barbecue joint green beans.
Yeah. And I don't go in for that one slice of white bread. I understand it's very authentic. I don't want to eat one slice of white bread.
No, if I'm going to have bread, it's going to be cornbread.
Yeah.
Jalapeno cornbread.
Yeah.
I
agree that it is authentic, but I don't care.
Yeah, that's never been a reason to do anything.
Yeah, authenticity is fake.
Luke writes, within the realm of tangible goods that can be purchased, what would be the most outrageous Christmas present you'd ask the real Santa for? For me, it'd be some kind of real arcade cabinet, maybe F-Zero AX.
That's a good question.
Yeah.
Like actual buyable things. The two things, and this is me snaking Luke's idea as a starting point. This might not actually be my final answer if I had more time to think about it, but it might be the Dungeons & Dragons pinball table or the Enter the Gungeon arcade cabinet. Games that I suspect are deep enough to play for a while that I would like to play in the privacy of my own home, not in an arcade.
Yeah. Does it have to be video game related? I don't have an answer for this. I can't even come up with one for fun. I'm so tired, Gary.
What would I do with a fucking plane? You know, like there's big thing. Like, oh, here's a yacht. Cool.
Yeah.
Here's a nightmare. Like, here's a logistical concern, the likes of which you'll never recover from. Uh-huh. Oh, I guess like if this is a thing you buy. It's not like something Santa would do, but like a house. I wouldn't mind if my mortgage was paid off.
Yeah.
That'd be pretty sick. I don't know if Santa could do that, but if so, if you're listening, like if he's a listener.
Yeah.
Did you see on The Onion today the Santa's ho ho ho? I started dating Mrs. Claus when she was only 14. It's really good. It's very funny. There's a YouTube of him reading it and it's really, really good. Like I was thousands of years old. In this climate, ho ho ho.
Yeah.
It's very funny.
Mm-hmm. It's hard not to go arcade and like I don't know, just like a real some kind of cocktail arcade cabinet. It's hard to say what, like maybe even just like a cocktail like multi-cade thing.
Beautiful object is it's a terror between beautiful object replayability and like affection.
Yeah,
you know, because you want something. Arcade games are not built to be replayed, but you want something. mm-hmm. you know, that you could play over and over again. So it's a, yeah. it's a tricky thing when it comes down to arcade cabinets.
Oh, how about this? A, like a dedicated VR game space. That would be neat.
Yeah, for there me. You go. Like yeah. a room.
Yeah.
Like Santa, you come home and Santa puts another level on their house.
You know, I've earned it.
Yeah. yeah. Mike says, what is your favorite Balatro deck? For me, that's Spectral.
Mm-hmm.
The one that you get the weirdo cards
yeah.
more frequently. I like the weirdo cards a lot.
I like Balatro quite a bit. All of it has fallen out of my head.
Yeah. Understandable. Yeah. Like, I haven't played it since we covered it.
Yeah.
So.
Let me see here. Mike also writes, what old school games from your childhood do you still play? For examples, I had my roommate steal and pawn my entire SNES collection and system in my first and awful steps into adulthood, and have now become financially secure enough to start rebuilding my collection. I found I still love games like Super Castlevania and Super Metroid.
Plenty of these. Many of them we go back to for the show, and I still like them. Next week, we're talking about Zelda, which we talked about for the show, and that was a childhood game for me, and I really liked it.
Mm-hmm.
And I still, recently, I played the DuckTales on the Disney Afternoon Collection. Like, oh, yeah. Didn't try to 100% or get a high score. I was just like, I'm going to play through this. It took like 20 minutes. It was really fun.
Yeah.
It was like a great little, like, takes the time of a TV show
mm-hmm.
kind of thing. And that's something I really loved for my childhood. So, like, a lot of Nintendo and Super Nintendo games I played at the time hold up, provided they are well-controlling action games.
Yeah.
You know, Final Fantasy II does hold up, like Final Fantasy II, IV, but that's something that I don't just pick up.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is related to an upcoming game announcement that we're having, but like, I could throw down and just play Mega Man X at any time.
Yeah.
Like, same. Also very short, you know, like, and I don't know. It's just anytime, day or night.
Yep. Yeah. So a lot of games. Hmm. I've felt a little bit of a Super Metroid creep up in me as well. And like, that's a 4-hour game.
Yeah.
Overencumbered Cucumber, our final lightning round question says, yo, what are some of your favorite Adventure Time songs?
God, it's been so long since I've seen Adventure Time. Like the credit song, like makes me like misty.
Like, yeah, it's really good at that kind of shit.
Yeah,
it's really good. Where me and Liv are rewatching it.
Mm-hmm. Because Fiona and Cake was a biff.
Yeah, because yeah. It's not very good. We didn't finish Fiona and Cake. I don't think it's over yet, but that season is really misguided, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So we're like, why would we watch the shitty version of this when we could just rewatch the good version?
Yeah.
And it's really nice to just have something that we know we're going to put on.
Mm-hmm.
Holds up, unsurprisingly. Still think yeah. it's one of the greatest TV shows of all time. And it is chock-a-block with great songs. Both theme songs are really good. I love Buff Buff Baby, Who Can Dance Like a Man.
yeah, that one is good.
And the finale song, which is called Time Adventure, is one of the only pieces of media to make me cry, which I don't usually do. But that sequence and that song, I think, are perfect.
Yeah.
Together. I think that song is really, really good. It's also, I'm going to get a tattoo. I've been thinking about getting a Jeremy tattoo for a while. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to just get like a picture of his face, like looking at me saying, hey, or whatever, yeah. You know? And so I was trying to think of what to get, and I'm going to get the refrain from that and a broken clock, I think. Cause the mm-hmm. refrain of that says, you know, is, will happen, happening happened. And it's basically about how you still have, you know, things in the past.
Yeah.
There always are. And I think yeah. that's a nice thing to remember about my friend. So I'm going to get that at some point, maybe during break.
Nice.
So yeah, might have that by the next time you hear me.
Cool. People will be able to hear the difference.
Yeah, exactly. If I start sounding real cool and tough. Once you get 7 tattoos,
yeah.
you become a real biker. You get like biker voice.
Yeah. It's like real marginal gains for a little while. And then yeah. like, yeah, you pass 6 and it just skyrockets.
It's called a Malcolm Gladwell tipping point. You should learn about it. to educate yourself.
Yeah.
Let's move into the topic.
Let's. I hear a motorcycle.
That is a plane. That is a low-flying plane.
Huh.
Yeah. Don't know
first time
about.
I've ever heard one of those. Weird.
It's very unusually low-flying. I don't know what's going on. We've been having, we're in an atmospheric river, so we've been having a lot of flooding and stuff.
Yeah.
Around here, like the levees broke in Seattle.
Oh, no.
Fucking crazy. So yeah, it might be related to that.
Hmm.
There's a flood watch in effect. I do not live in an area that gets flooded.
So the topic this time, we are doing one of our own here because it's come up a couple of times in conversation, and it is worth, I think, defining what we mean by it. And we want to define the fantasy.
Yeah, before we get into Ductionary Part 4, define the fantasy, because we talk about this a lot. We kind of threw it out there without really explaining it because it seems evident, or at least it seems evident to me, but that doesn't mean it is. Thing. It's related to some things we've talked about before, but it's not one-to-one.
Yeah.
What do we mean when we say the fantasy, K?
What we mean when we say the fantasy is not entirely dissimilar from role-playing, but it can apply to a bunch of things that are not just role-playing games. I think it is something akin to the buy-in of it is fun to Do I feel like I'm doing the thing that is in this game? God, because that just sounds like embodiment, doesn't it?
It's more like, is the thing you're doing in this game cool? Like, are you doing something that's consonant with the thing in this game, and is it a fantasy worth having?
Yeah.
You know, when I think of the fantasy, I think a lot about, is this game, there are games that are just wireframe. Like, I love Monster Train 2. I don't have any feelings about the fantasy of managing a train full of devils. Or whatever, you know, that doesn't do anything. But when I think of like, play something like a Deus Ex or whatever, the character you are, the situation I'm in, is like a fantasy. There's an appeal to that. And when you do things in that, there are actions that feel like they are consonant with the fantasy, and then things that kind of spoil the fantasy.
Yeah.
It has a lot to do with wireframing or like ludonarrative dissonance. But I think it's a little broader than that. A good example recently where about the fantasy that I was thinking about, and this just isn't me just picking on something that like I don't like, but thinking about Night Rain, a problem we both had with that was the fact that it's you and three super burly people hammering down a guy with hammers bigger than them, and they're taking 5% health damage each time. That's not the fantasy.
That's not like, the fantasy. That's not what I want. I want to be
wireframe. That's a mechanical consideration primarily. That's not what you're doing, though. That doesn't seem cool.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, it just, and also, like, that's a change, too. Like, it's a change in the fantasy, and that ends up feeling like a little bit of a fundamental betrayal. For me, the fantasy of, you know, of Dark Souls, you know, is sold in the first one, is sold in Demon Souls. This is a hostile world. You are outmatched. You are smaller than everything. And only by persistence and endurance are you going to overcome, right?
In addition to just there being a believability to, you know, a big guy taking lots of hits and not believability to a little guy taking lots of hits.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if you've kept up with watching any Night Rain, but I've seen, you know, I'll watch YouTubes and stuff, watch a couple of YouTubes about it. I want to look at the new bosses and stuff. Yeah. And like, literally you can have three people hammering a dog. And like in real life, that just gets you a next door. But in Night Rain, it just takes you forever.
Yeah.
And I understand it from a balance perspective. Somebody was like, this would not be mechanically satisfying as a wireframe if this went down as fast as it would. But for me, it spoils the fantasy because if it's me and my buddies hitting something with hammers, I'm going to want it to go down quick.
Yeah. You know?
Unless it's like a kaiju or something. You know, it ruins the fantasy. I no longer can feel like I am a cool adventurer going through this world, you know, making my way through it, feeling like what I'm doing.
Yeah. This is an invincible dog that takes a Herculean amount of effort from multiple people in order to put down. Yeah.
And just wait until you see a skinny guy and how many more hits that guy is going to take. What if there was an underweight fella?
Yeah.
He's going to take so many more hits.
Yeah. You know?
So it's not quite embodiment. It's like, because embodiment is how much you physically feel the thing. Like, you know, how much you, when you want to dodge your character and you move your arms and move the controller.
That's embodiment. Yeah.
That's embodiment. You feel like you are the thing. This is when you feel like you are playing the role, or you feel like you are doing the thing the game is presenting to you in fiction.
Yes. And like there are things that you can do in a game that otherwise has good fantasy, you know, Deus Ex, right? I'm picking I'm picking my augmentations. I have incredible freedom within this very well realized world. I am a secret super agent who is more than human. Go. Right. Yes. You're doing a lot of stuff that is in line with that. There's also a bunch of asshole physics stuff you can do.
Yeah.
You know, like, fantasy. Yeah. You know, like corner peeking or any kind of like bug or exploit or something that is kind of playing with the box can break it as well. Mm-hmm. Also like, this is not specific to Deus Ex, grinding breaks the fantasy in a huge way.
Yeah. Grinding. Right? One of the reasons why grinding feels bad to me is that it's not something that characters would do.
Yeah.
Like, yes, you would train, mm-hmm. but you wouldn't train by going out and racking up a body count of animals.
Yeah. I mean, it's like you only get better in tennis by playing somebody who's like slightly better than you.
Yeah.
Like you can't just go down to the public courts and then just like slam on some middle schoolers and get better. Like,
yeah. Yeah. Slimes.
You can't be killed by Golbez, go down and then just stomp on some children and then go back and beat Golbez. Yes. That's not going to happen.
Yeah. Grinding does not feel, it feels fantasy breaking. Yeah. Taking in knowledge from outside the game for corner cases can feel fantasy breaking to me. Like moving to Deus Ex, something I really love that you can do it is you can lay down the little lamb so that when Anna Navarra comes in, when you're talking to the NSF leader, she blows up. I think that's okay. You can do that.
Yeah.
You know, your character would never do it.
Yeah.
It ruins the fantasy. Your character wouldn't know it. So it's kind of like meta knowledge. You know, when you talk about playing with the box, there's also a bringing in something.
Yeah.
You know, from like a guide or something, you know, from past playthroughs can kind of fuck with a fantasy.
Yeah. I think that, like the consonants is a huge deal. Like speaking about like, you know, is the fantasy good? Like this gets into like theming, right? Like,
yeah,
you know, any number of games, like it is hard for me to get on board because like, even if the mechanic is fine, I don't know. There are probably a lot of games with really good mechanics that I am turned off by because of not just the aesthetic. I just don't think that what it is asking of me is cool. Yeah. You know, like if it's just like a, you know, slightly a little bit too anime, right?
It matters what you're doing, both mechanically and what you're being told you're doing.
Yeah. It's like, not insurmountable. It's so much easier to get, over the fantasy, to get over the, what you are doing, you know, in this as a work of fiction. It is so much easier to get over that than it is to get over the mechanical one, right?
Yeah. If it's fun, you will get over a lot of stuff if it's fun to do.
Yeah.
But it's like a lot of things we talk about, it is a por que no los tres. You know, like why, if you can get them all, that's the sweet spot.
Yeah.
You know, another good example of a fantasy ruining thing for me is the game Arkham Knight. To me, Batman doesn't just fight paramilitary dudes.
Mm-hmm.
My fantasy about being Batman does not involve clearing towers to get the data and provide the uplink.
Mm-hmm.
Part of that is just representation, or like how it's represented, like map nodes. Mm-hmm. That's not my Batman fantasy. You know, the fantasy is more important when it is a game with a central premise that presents one to you.
Yeah.
And some games kind of don't. Like they're more abstract or they are just not as interested in it.
Mm-hmm.
Dragon Age Inquisition, horrible at the fantasy. I'm going to spend all my time bending over to pick up Elfruit because I'm the Messiah.
Yeah.
I'm going to, you know, train your 10 cows because I'm the Messiah. Get fucked. Doesn't make any sense.
That shit makes a little bit of sense in like an MMO, right? Like you're one of many. Like there are tons of, you know, people, but, you know, potentially the heroes, you know, you've got to go and, you know, do some work in this. That makes sense. Compare that to the way that a similar thing of, okay, I need to do this in order to get resources or whatever. Baldur's Gate 2, right?
Yes.
You know,
because well, justification.
Yeah, narrative justification. But just like, shit, I don't know. I'm going to become a mercenary for a while, right? Like
that suddenly, is the fantasy of D&D.
Yes.
Like I'm going to do work for hire for a little bit to get more powerful. It's a really subtle thing between ludonarrative dissonance. But I think that the difference is there's a way, one, like the fantasy is like a promise that's made. It's not just a direct plot thing. It's more ephemeral.
Yeah.
And the fantasy can change. Like a good example of something that I think breaks a fantasy or can be consonant with a fantasy, but does have a ludonarrative dissonance is Fallout 4.
Yeah.
It is ludonarratively dissonant that I'm going to go rescue somebody else's kid as a side quest before I go rescue my kid.
Yeah.
That sucks. But I can reconceptualize my guy as an explorer very mm-hmm. easily. I have this one thing that is the plot that's telling me to do it, but the actual fantasy of the game is being in this world.
Yeah.
And going around clearing map icons and just checking out what things that are on the horizon doesn't break the fantasy for me because that is part of the implicit thing.
Yeah.
It's not the plot, but it is part of what's being presented to me as the appeal.
Yeah, this this problem is imminently more solvable than I am capable of doing it, and doing one can advance toward the other, right? Yeah. Like, yeah, there are any number of ways you can justify it, right?
Yes. Like, so there is a lot of this that lives in your head.
Yeah.
You know, and that can be true of ludonarrative dissonance as well. You can say, oh, like you are going to go beat up a bunch of fourth graders at tennis to get good at, you know, Andre Agassi. Mm-hmm. Because those are the only people you have, and eventually you'll learn things. You're just going to fucking beat so many fourth graders at tennis at this thing. Like you can justify it to yourself, but it's like a subjective degree of how much you have to,
mm-hmm.
how much work you have to bring into that.
Yeah. And like an example that is not like ludonarrative dissonance and also an example of the fantasy, you know, changing underneath you. The fantasy of the early Resident Evil games is so much more interesting to me than the fantasy of the later ones.
Yeah.
Later ones not being like, okay, the fantasy of 7, way cooler to me than the fantasy of 8.
Yeah. Well, and right? It's interesting the way that's different than just the plot.
Yes.
You know, it's not just the plot. It's like, the situation your character is in and whether you buy it and are interested in it.
Yeah. So I'm like, when I say later Resident Evil, I'm talking like, I'm sorry to say it, a little bit of 4, but like especially 5 and 6, like turning it into a military fantasy, not necessarily a huge part of it for me. You know, like it kind of, you know, so specifically the Chris and Pierce campaign, I'm not here to shoot. I got into this series because like I was trapped in a house. I got into this series because like Resident Evil 2, it's a whole city and we are two people who are not exceptionally qualified to be able to handle this, right?
You're on the back foot.
Yeah.
You know, and that is part of the fantasy.
It's like, part of the horror, but it's a, you know, but it's part of like, I don't know, like you're being asked to do, it leads to you being asked to do a bunch of stuff. And also like military is not my flavor of power fantasy that I want.
Yeah, it's not an interesting thing to be asked to do. You know, there's part of that where you're just being asked to put down insurgents or like
five
where you're being asked to kill brown people.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, it's common. It's not cool. It doesn't seem cool to me. You know, it's kind of a nebulous term that can apply to a lot of things. And it's a little bit, I know it when I see it.
Yeah.
You know, so there is a some fuzzy outlines on some of this, which I recognize. If anyone's just saying like, oh, this is just mechanics versus story, or oh, this is just ludonarrative dissonance.
Yeah.
I disagree, but I think that is related to those things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's a little bit of overlap.
I mean, so this is something that's going to, that we talk about like on an upcoming episode of Real Itch Hours, but like something that made me think like, yeah, this is probably worth talking about is the discussion of changing class in Planescape Torment, right? Like changing class midway through the game in Baldur's Gate 3 does undercut it a little bit. Being able to change established party members classes, like undercuts the fantasy, like having a non-cleric. I can change.
But that's not what Shadowheart is. Like, it's so important to Shadowheart that she is specifically a cleric, you know, of a specific Shar. Mm-hmm. That is who she is.
Yes. Yeah.
The fact that I can make her into a storm fighter or whatever, mechanically, I can get over it.
Yeah.
You know, because I can do it. I can put on blinders for that. But that is a fantasy killer.
Mm-hmm.
That does fuck things up. And the reasons why I like Baldur's Gate 3 is that if you can kill the part of you that wants optimal play, you can succeed being consonant with the fantasy no problem.
Yeah.
The game is not so hard. Optimal play fights the fantasy a lot.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about grinding, we talk about like min-maxing, dual classing.
Trying to do some like the unhoused person railgun. at the table ruins it. It's just like, well, this is just a counter to the counter to the exercise, right? Like, it's not in the spirit of the arrangement.
The what you're referring to is the peasant railgun.
The peasant railgun, yeah.
Because like unhoused person railgun, I was trying to think of. I was like, oh, is that something they fucking invented?
Yeah.
Is it going to be a new executive order? But like,
no. Sorry. I went a little bit overboard trying to be sensitive, but also in my head, for all the world, it was the hobo railgun.
Yeah. I wasn't clarifying it to correct necessarily. It was to know the proper noun you were referring to.
Yes. Thank you. Yeah.
Does that make sense?
I think and hope it does. Like, we've given a lot of examples of like what breaks the fantasy, something that supports it, something that we have coming up. There are missions that you do in Thief 2. Like, the second mission that you do in that is the rent is due, and I just need to like go and do some freelance thieving of a warehouse in order to pay the rent.
Exceedingly consonant.
Exceedingly in the fantasy, right? Being able, you know, like using your skills in this world where the city sucks and it is hard to live, you know, using that to go and just do some stuff that is not high stakes, right?
Yeah. It's not part of the story. Yeah. You know, it's just what your character would do. And one of the reasons why I like that fantasy is because the idea of being a thief and sneaking into shit is appealing to me.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, whereas if the idea was, you're a Blackwater consultant, the rent is due. go recruit some mercenaries or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't want to be that. It's not interesting to me.
Not for me.
You know, so I'd be interested to hear people's thoughts on this. Like, if people have good examples of this. If not, I think one thing that this might help with, I guess, is adding something to vocabulary to have a more specific way to explain why something is not working for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it might just not be the fantasy for you, or the thing you have to do might break the fantasy too much.
Yeah.
You know, for you. It's going to be a thing where everyone draws their own line. And I don't think there's anybody who is a pure, like purely on one side of it.
No.
Is invisible to this or purely cares about this entirely. I think that most people fall in the middle of that.
Yeah. And everybody's going to have a different fantasy that works for them. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Let's move on to some responses.
Yeah, felt comfortable going a little bit over on questions there because we only have responses about one game. So we have Joey talking about Wasteland 3 here. Hello, thank you so much for covering this huge-ass game for me. I'm really happy that you talk so much about the tone because it is one of the main reasons I executive produced it. Between guns that shoot frozen ferrets, giant Reagan robots, and an evil Santa workshop, I wouldn't be surprised to see anyone bounce off of this game if they were expecting a more serious apocalyptic tone. How much does tone factor into your enjoyment of a game compared to mechanics? How far would this game have had to have gone off the rails towards wackiness before y'all would have been turned off? Was it already at a place where the mechanics saved it from going that far? Similarly with Monster Train, I can put up with a lot of tonal and aesthetic things that I don't care for if the game and mechanics and wireframe are excellent. Great music and a decent sense of humor carried this one for me. IMO, Wasteland, and Fallout both provide a much-needed tonal shift in the apocalyptic genre. Not everything needs to be The Last of Us or The Road to be good.
Yeah. Somewhat related to what we were talking about.
A little bit,
and,
yeah.
Yeah. Insightful. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
There probably is a line where this would have gotten too wacky for me.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't have been, if I knew everything about it and I knew what the mechanics would end up, I probably still would have stuck with it.
Yeah.
But sometimes something just turns me off. I get the ick too hard to keep going.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a good example of that is like, I believe everyone that says Fear and Hunger is really interesting and good.
Yeah.
It gave me a lot of the ick.
Mm-hmm.
Someday perhaps I'll go through it. I've watched YouTubes about it. I am interested in it. Shout out to Worm Girl. But I don't, it icks me out.
Yeah.
You know, that tone got too far for me.
Yeah. I think that it is a question of, so the mechanics in Wasteland 3 are so good that it does push the line out pretty far for what it would cross. Like, the example of what would turn us off would be Borderland on this, but that's also because I don't want to play a looter shooter, right?
Exactly. So they're so related.
Yeah, you know, but if this was Tactics Games set in the Borderlands world with a similar aesthetic and like a similar relentlessness to that, we're talking a real tough putt.
Yeah, yeah, that's a flavor that I don't like. This just happens to the fact that it cannot be understated how much the fact that Wasteland 3 eases up,
yeah,
helps it out. The Dorseys, I think, are a mistake.
Yes.
In this, like across the board, I don't think they're that interesting. Even when you learn more about them, I don't think they're really good. And I think that telling those voice actors, no, bigger, more in the studio was a real problem.
You know what I think saves it? You know what I think saved the first impression for me was the Blood of the Lamb music over the tutorial boss fight. That was like, okay, like, yes, some of this is, but there's taste here.
Yes, somebody is making choices with intention.
Yes.
You know, Eric says, mechanically, Wasteland 3 was a delight. Tight tactical combat with good scenario design and just enough of the Kodiak to add scale and variety to the larger battles. Narratively, I found it really off-putting. There are wild swings between wacky and cynical, and the game clanged when it pushed me to consider the wacky things in a serious context. Mecha Reagan is all well and good, but the game steers you towards supporting Mecha Reagan to prop up a petty tyrant and wipe out the peaceful machine commune using both quest rewards and getting the good ending to progress. I don't need good boy points to keep me engaged with the narrative, but the impression I was left with was a very transcendental, or transactional rather, mean-spirited view of the world and an overall experience that was fun to play, but I can't see myself revisiting. I get it. There are a lot of things I like about the story in this. I do feel like it's a little cynical.
Yeah.
When they are showing that both sides suck of everything, I think they play that a little bit too far, and it's not as nuanced as better writers do it.
Yeah.
Like, compare with, like, Tyranny.
Yes. It would be
a point of comparison for a game that I think has a cynical world, but feathers the gas a little bit better.
Yeah. Frostpunk, incredibly cynical world. You don't have to play it. Like it is perfectly valid. In fact, a fun way to play it to not indulge, not make it easier for yourself. So like Wasteland, 3 does want you to compromise, but yeah, I can totally see where this would not work.
Yep. I get it. Yeah. I don't necessarily disagree. No.
Yeah. Ponder writes, I'm really enjoying your Wasteland 3 coverage. When speaking to Farron Brigo, he has the line, it's not quite Vegas, but it's close. And since I can't go back, this will have to do, won't it? It seems to be a reflection by the developers on being unable to return to the Fallout license or to AAA development, but finding satisfaction in their work on Wasteland. I found it moving. On that note, one of the songs at the end of the Cult DLC is a Yeehaw Jamboree cover of the Laverne and Shirley theme song, which seemed to convey a similar theme with lyrics along the lines of, we're going to make it, and we're going to do it our way. Speaking of, I'm part of a new lore-first Fallout Wiki project at vats.wiki. The site is being founded by much of the talent behind articles you may be familiar with pertaining to LGBT and disability representation, as well as occult lore. We're still a small project, so it'd be great if you could bump us and check the site out. Go with the glow! And then they conclude with create invoice, and I'm not sure what that means.
That makes me feel like that was a leftover from a standard email or something.
Yes.
They sent for that kind of stuff. We're not going to create invoice.
No.
We're just going to trust it to the honor system that you'll pay us for this. Mm-hmm. No invoice needed. You can pay us for the shout out. Venmo at, just kidding. check out that sounds like a cool website. Here's the shout out for this episode.
Yeah,
here we are. Did this not come through proper channels? No problem with that. But yeah, check that out. That sounds cool.
Mm-hmm.
That's Wiki.
Yeah. Doing a story first Fallout Wiki when pretty much every game wiki now is just mechanical stuff and stubs at that.
Certainly modern ones.
Yeah.
Like they've taken so much from us. here. It's been really refreshing covering Torment for Real Itch Hours because it came out at a time when the internet was better.
Yeah.
So there is a lot of resources out there that are not stupid.
Yeah.
They're actually in depth.
I went to a fandom wiki and it had like a little module halfway through where it was AI generated questions with answers from the page. And it was like my phone was covered in bugs.
Yeah. I know this is a standard thing and most people already agree with me about this, but like, boy, I wish AI was a thing I could shoot.
Yep.
Nobody likes it. I've never met anyone who likes it.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone is like, this fucking sucks. It's ruining everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. It should matter that most people don't like something.
It and really, really doesn't should. Matter. Like, you know? It should, and it should matter that it makes things work worse.
Yeah.
Searching for something locally on, I'm not just talking about Google, searching for something in an email app doesn't work anymore.
Significantly worse.
Yeah.
You know, searching YouTube, significantly worse. It's just worse. Mm-hmm. I remember when it was better. It's not rose-colored glasses. It's just worse with this shit.
Yeah.
Like, and even, you know, it seems like we're just going off on a rant. Hey, Wasteland, it's about killing AIs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's related.
Yeah.
Riley says, Wasteland 3 was the most morally conflicted I felt in a CRPG. From the off, I refused to side against the refugees and insisted anyone who surrenders to me surrenders into my custody, not summary execution or cruel treatment by the marshals. This, of course, didn't win me many friends among the 100 families or marshals. But the bad feelings really started bubbling up when Angela Duth arrived. As a series veteran, I had extra sympathy for Angela, but also the people of Arizona who were in their situation in part because of General Vargas nobly sacrificing his own life to save the day instead of ordering somebody else to do it, which deprived the Rangers of experienced leadership during the desperate time. Apologies for stumbling over words. The noble thing not necessarily being the right thing. When Land of Confusion started playing on my way back to the final confrontation, it really hit me. I knew I didn't have local support, and if I helped Angela with her coup, we probably wouldn't be able to help Arizona. So I sided with the Patriarch, reassuring myself that he was dying anyway, and if someone was going to be there for the people in years to come, it had to be me. But still, I killed my comrade for the crime of opposing a tyrant, and was now stuck as his most valuable lieutenant. I felt like complete shit. It ruled.
Yeah. That is a really interesting way for the story to go, and also part of why the cynicism is, you know, okay for me, which
it,
is
what they about, want it to, yeah. to be. It when I say it overdoes it, it's because it does it in every situation. Every choice is like this.
Yeah,
it's not the main thrust of it. Like the actual main thrust of do you side with a tyrant to help your people back home is good.
Mm-hmm.
That is a good morally conflicted choice for a game.
You know, the things you value should be costly.
Yes.
Right?
And the problem, you know, when we talk about games that are honorable but good or whatever, it's that there's no cost.
Yeah.
Like, why wouldn't you just do the good thing? There's no mm-hmm. cost to it. Like, you can either kick the puppy or save the puppy. There's no cost to saving the puppy
mm-hmm.
and no reward for kicking the puppy. Who gives a shit?
Yeah.
You know, it's not even a question.
Yeah. Ammon writes, hello all. Your first episode on Wasteland 3 piqued my interest enough to download it again and give it a second chance. I bounced off of it when I first tried it, when I bought it along with my Steam Deck. I just didn't know the system well enough to find a control scheme that wasn't terrible trackpad nonsense. Thankfully, with the decision to actually play it on my computer for the second foray, it is going down smooth. I found a delightful surprise when I was setting up my team. I modeled my first two characters after myself and my wife, ready to take the fight to my hometown, and after getting through the tutorial, I went on to make the rest of my team. I was positively delighted to find out that if you went beyond the lowest pip for size, that you can make a compact character, which basically looks like a kid. While you could call me against child soldiers in a general sense, I do make a small exception when I'm modeling my kids to go and wreak havoc with me and the missus in a virtual post-apocalyptic Colorado. I'll be at it for a while yet before I manage to get through all of Wasteland, but I'm sure absolute chaos is just what this family needs to de-stress over the holidays. Thanks for the excellent content across all of your shows. The two of you really do excellent work. I hope that you all at Duckfeed have a happy holidays. P.S. Between Wasteland and Planescape Torment for real itch hours, I'm rather swamped on interesting and fun games to be playing. If you all could camp out on some BS JRPGs for a few months to give me some time to catch up, it would be much appreciated.
At some point, we'll have to do something that has no thematic or mechanical depth.
Yeah.
Don't worry.
Yeah.
It'll happen. Young kids will save the world with no interesting choices.
Yeah.
It'll happen again. I mean, tell me I'm wrong. Yeah. At some point it will happen again.
Mm-hmm. I we like talking about games with non-standard settings. If I was from Colorado and I was going and stomping around these inaccurate representations of those cities, it would feel pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It would be, and I like the idea of making your family.
Yeah.
You know, that's a fun idea. I like it. You can make a little kid character in this. Mm-hmm. That would feel weird in Fallout, but not in Wasteland.
Yeah.
You know? JT says, greetings, Gary and Kay. Wasteland 3 is the game that I credit with finally getting me fully into CRPGs. I had dabbled with your early Fallouts and Baldur's Gates and the like through the 90s, but decided a bit too early that this type of game wasn't for me. Apparently, all I needed was a post-apocalyptic, tongue-in-cheek, slightly nutso romp through my home state. Everything from the Cargo Cult music covers to the over-the-top apocalypse design of the armor hooked me. Even more, what I usually bounced off of with previous CRPGs that I tried was the process of figuring out how I wanted to play. Usually if I had to restart too many times after finding something that I didn't like about my build, I'd lose interest. But for some reason, I was able to play through that opening tutorial zone several times until I got it right, fully engaged each time and eager to try new things. This was already not concise, so I know it might not make it into air, but I'm glad I tried Wasteland 3 because it got me into some of my favorite games of all time, such as DOS 2, Disco Elysium, and I'm eyeballing Pillars of Eternity, Deadfire next, once it goes on sale. Thanks for diving into Wasteland 3. I can't wait to hear your thoughts.
Yeah.
And then so some nice bits, just some kind words.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you for the kind words. Appreciate you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. And congratulations. Everyone is playing DOS 2 now because of the Divinity trailer.
Yep.
Oh, looks God. Sick as shit.
Yeah.
Oh, baby. Finally, yeah. A reason to live.
Mm-hmm. we were pretty touch and go there for a while.
Yeah, I gotta keep going for a little bit, I guess. That looks sick.
Yeah.
Also, read the article about the AI thing.
Yeah.
Read the clarifications and read Jason's follow-up tweet.
Yep.
About it. I'm not saying it's good behavior.
Mm-hmm.
As a headline, it looks way worse than it is.
Yeah. It's very bad communication, I think.
It's super bad communication. And I kind of blame Jason Schreiber.
Sure.
For just he should have known that mm-hmm. is a dumb thing to just put out as a headline on and a Blue Sky thing. But it is less dire than it looks.
Mm-hmm.
Again, not good behavior. Don't like it. But it is not, we're just going to start using AI in the finished product of a thing. We're going to start firing people. That is not what Larian is doing.
Yeah.
So educate yourself before you just get mad at a headline. It's what social media is designed to do. Mm-hmm. You're supposed to get incomplete information and get angry about it.
Fight against it.
Don't let them do it to you.
Yeah.
DOS 2 is like dirt cheap right now.
Yep. Absolutely. Get it. That's so good.
Super, super good game. And if you like DOS 2, DOS 1 is also really good. Not as good, but it's still really fun.
Yeah. I think that's it.
Yeah. We appreciate everyone writing in. Now is the time when we announce what we're doing for February.
Yes, it is. So everybody already knows January's games. We're starting with a rerun of our Legend of Zelda episode we did on Bonfireside Chat. Then we're going to Gary and Will talking about The Binding of Isaac. Then we're doing an episode about Thief 2. And then wrapping up with RoboCop Rogue City, just as a refresher. But we're doing some games in February as well.
Yeah. First one can be kind of a weird one for us, but I'm excited about it. Mortal Kombat 2. It's not going to be a comprehensive look at that, like any fighting game. Mm-hmm. We're not fighting game sickos. But I think we can say that we both liked Mortal Kombat 2 a lot as children.
Yes.
And stuff. And we haven't talked about one.
No, not at all. We have talked about the property at length.
Yeah. Like a lot of adaptation decay and stuff. We talked about the album.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about multiple movies, the album and the cartoon, but we've never actually talked about the games.
Yeah.
Ludicrous.
This was an excuse for me to get the recent collection that came out mm-hmm. with all the museum matter. Excited to talk about Mortal Kombat 2, a game that I played a lot of as a kid, a property that I have a lot of affection for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is a 13-year-old's idea of a super cool fighting game.
Mm-hmm.
And we're all 13 at one point.
Yes. After that, this is a K-pick. We're going to be talking about Mega Man X4, the Mega Man X game, the first one that came out on the PlayStation. Later SNES Mega Man X's, kind of iffy. But Mega Man X4, good. I have a ton of good memories from it, and it is different enough from X1, 2, and 3 that I think it is worth talking about as a separate thing. And we have not talked about Mega Man in a while.
Yeah, I have no experience with this one, really. I don't think. I may have played it at one point. I don't really remember it, though, so I am just excited to go back to Mega Man.
Yeah. Brace yourself for some animated cutscene and some voice acting.
Oh, I played Mega Man 8, I recall, or Mega Man 7.
It's better. No, yeah, Mega Man 8 is the one with that. It is better than that.
Okay, well, that's good. It couldn't be worse. Like, that is about as bad as it gets.
Yes.
And then our premium episode for that month is Indiana Jones and the Great Circle. Mm-hmm. The recent Machine Games game that came out. We like Machine Games a lot.
Yeah.
We've both been looking for an excuse to play it.
Yeah. Really want to. I mean, I played like the first chapter of it. I'm really looking forward to going back and bonking a lot of black shirts on the head with objects.
It is a good time to kill Nazis in games.
Mm-hmm.
And further.
Yeah.
And elsewise. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be February. If you have thoughts about those games, write in by February 15th. It's always the 15th. Keep your thoughts concise and specific. And if you have thoughts about multiple games, write in multiple responses. It helps us organize.
Yes.
We would appreciate that.
Yeah.
If you're listening to this and you have a project or product and you're any kind of oppressed person, send me an email at gary@duckfeed.tv. Include your pronouns, names, links, anything that might be useful. We'd be happy to give you a shout out.
Yeah. This is the first thing that we're recording after DuckStream. Mm-hmm. No, we recorded yesterday. This is the first WAF that comes out after DuckStream. It was a huge success. Thank you so much to everybody who donated, who watched, who spread the word, who chatted with matches and merch and Twitch revenue. We're over 32,000 for Point of Pride. Monumental achievement. Thank you so much.
Yeah, we're very grateful. It was a lot of fun and looking forward to next year, which will be different.
Yeah.
A fun thing, like this was the last year that's going to be exactly like this. Positive life changes are going to result in a format change.
Yes.
So look out for that. Mm-hmm. Also, join us on Patreon if you want to hear those premium episodes. You want to hear our December one, which is our live panel. If you want to hear RoboCop, if you want to hear Indiana Jones, go to Patreon, patreon.com/duckfeedtv for $5 a month. You get those. For $10 a month, you get even more. You get tons of bonus shows. We think it's a really good value. We would love it if you did.
We would.
Helps us out tons.
Mm-hmm. I don't know that I have anything else other than, if you're celebrating, happy holidays. Regardless, be safe.
Yes. And big thanks to Gwen.
Yes. Huge thanks to Gwen.
And we'll see you next week, with an intro about The Legend of Zelda.